So Anthropic, they created an AI agent called Claudius, because I guess it's Claude, and they gave it access to its office, to their office snack shop for 6 weeks. So this was in April, and they documented it. This is like, I didn't like to dig into this. I saw someone give it a presentation at a conference, and I'm like, this is brilliant. So I'll give you the I'll land the plane. It did not go well at all.
Welcome back to Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today, I'm catching up with our old friend Yuri Cataldo, founding partner at Anatheum Capital, AI research scientist at Autodesk, and senior fellow at The Digital Economist. We're exploring AI agents' vulnerabilities, how to exploit them for discounts or chaos, the need for human-centric AI policy, and Yuri's work in blockchain and digital currency. Yuri shares insights on AI ethics, regulatory gaps, and his upcoming paper. Check out Anatheum Capital at anatheumcapital.com, Autodesk at autodesk.com, and The Digital Economist at thedigitaleconomist.org. Don't forget to check out bostonblockchainweek.com to catch up on all the cool things that happened over the past week. Now let's dive in with Yuri Cataldo. All right, got Yuri Cataldo joining me again. Yuri, man, what have you been up to since the last time we talked? We had you on, I think, the second to last episode we recorded from last season.
Oh, yeah. So thank you, Kyle, again, for having me on. It's been a busy year, so...
I bet.
So what am I working on these days? I guess I could start with I've got three job titles. So first and foremost, still the founding partner at Athenian Capital, which I think is what we talked about last time. I'm a research scientist at Autodesk, which we may have already discussed.
I don't know that we talked about that one last time. Is that new or is that?
We didn't. It's not new, but I think I've just been talking more about that job title since being an AI research scientist is the cool, sexy thing. And so I thought, why not actually talk about it versus kind of keep that hidden?
Right.
So there's that one. And then the new item, which is totally brand new, which I started this year, is I'm a senior fellow at The Digital Economist, which is a think tank based in DC, also New York City. But it's a human-centered think tank. Mm-hmm. Which sounds kind of a weird caveat to it. So it covers
it's an AI podcast this year, so it makes sense to specify.
So it's there's seven different areas they focus in. I'm part of the digital currency initiative and the blockchain initiative, but they have some members focus on AI, just policy legislation, supply chains in there too, mm-hmm. circular economy, and a few other areas. But essentially, it's how do you look at different aspects of what's happening in the world, but from a human-centric approach? And that's also how I try to approach a lot of things anyway, because humans have to use things.
Is The Digital Economist in any way related to The Economist, like the old magazine publication?
It is not, although they may have chosen that name so that people make that connection. It is not. They are two separate entities. The Digital Economist was founded in 2017, mm-hmm. I believe, by a former, her name is Narup. She was a former fellow at the Harvard, one of the Harvard graduate programs, and decided that there needed to be, again, a more human-centric approach to some things and founded this program. So I'm excited to be part of it. And we'll get into this a little bit later, but I'm working on my first paper, which is exciting and fun, and I forgot how much I like to write and hate to write all at the same time.
I was going to ask. Before we get into that one, though, I think this is good. This ties into your Autodesk stuff from the looks of it. But when I was doing a little bit of background research on it, because I like to check and see what you guys have been up to, mm-hmm. notice that you have now an AI agent on there where I can just punch in a website address and I can ask you a bunch of questions. So I actually went and asked your AI agent what I should ask you about in this interview. And it unfortunately gave me a bunch of stuff that we talked about in the last one, like the book Be Left Behind and some of the other stuff about the trends in AI and blockchain and like how they're, I guess, being used in like healthcare. I remember we talked a lot about the healthcare use cases last time. So
yes.
I guess maybe in order to piggyback off of that, like tell me about the AI agent thing. Like, is there a lot of demand for that or is this just a fun project?
So Yuri AI. Yes. So that was honestly a fun project that I've been doing on the side. But it does link back a little bit to my work at Autodesk. So Autodesk has these three centers of making. They're called technology centers. One is based in Boston, which is, so I'm based in Boston. That's why I was actually hired by Autodesk originally. Mm-hmm. There's another one of these centers in San Francisco at Pier 9. And there is one in Toronto. So over the summertime, I was visiting the office in San Francisco, and I ran across a startup who is building these digital twins, AI digital twins.
Yeah.
And so what these three centers do is essentially pull together industry and startups together in one place, like a makerspace, and they give them access to free resources. And it's one way for the company and researchers like myself to see where the future is going in different areas.
Sure. It also gives you a little bit of ideas and maybe where to put some capital in to help some of these startups go.
Yeah. Potentially. Although historically Autodesk does not usually invest in startups, but there's always, things that change. Sometimes.
Right.
But essentially though, like very much of like having a conversation with startups about maybe what our software is missing and what they're focused on. So this is from one of the startups.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in your own AI agent, when you click on my AI agent at the bottom, it has like build your own. And that's a link to the company who does it. I'm not affiliated with them anyway, which is also why I'm not going to talk about their name on this podcast. But the two founders were great. And so they approached me and they said, we think this is like a phenomenal opportunity. If you want to try it out, you should definitely do that. And to be honest, when they first approached me about it, I thought it was kind of hokey.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
They have an idea about like creating your own kind of digital record. And I know in their mind, they want you to like every day kind of write something. And then this could be an actual reflection of you as a person that lives on. I don't care about that as much right now. But the one thing that I that they brought up
mm-hmm.
was that this is a fine opportunity to add in all of the notes, all of the kind of background research I was doing for the papers I'm writing.
Mm.
And then essentially I can add a QR code to my papers when I publish them and someone can click on it and have a conversation with Yuri AI about why this paper, like what are the background?
Right.
And I thought it was a brilliant idea because I'm on like draft 8,
mm-hmm.
actually version 8. I'm on draft multiple, but like version 8 of this paper I'm writing in the fashion industry, some get a little more technical, other ones a little more like open-ended. And I thought it'd be great if I could just pull them all together. So if you were to go to Yuri AI and start asking about supply chains and fashion, it has all of the drafts that I've been doing and things I've been thinking about, and it can have a conversation with you much better than I could.
Right. Perfect memory recall. I mean,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Because my memory recall right now is not so great. So that's what I was really thinking about it is a way for me to complement my work. I also put the because I own the rights to Be Left Behind, because I also am the publisher of that book. So I uploaded that. It was a way that if you wanted to talk about blockchain in an easy way without someone selling you something, you can go talk to Yuri AI. So that's really the basis behind it.
Real quick on the book, I just want to mention, we talked a lot about the book in the last time we had you on. So if people want to hear a deeper conversation about that, I'll make sure that that's linked in the episode description.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It is still timely today.
Yes, it is.
There are some references, again, they don't quite matter so much, but the thing I really like about what my co-author did with the book is we focus on evergreen material. So it's really
mm-hmm.
a non-biased way. I mean, I think it's unbiased to look at Bitcoin, blockchain, where it came from, what's happening, how to kind of evaluate different ideas and projects and what you can do without steering people one way or another, which is what I appreciate.
Yes.
And similarly, Yuri AI
can do the same.
Yuri AI can do this the same. The one interesting part about that. So as part of the Digital Economist, I also join the AI group every once in a while. And we were talking about our own digital twin AIs. I'm the only person in the group who has one right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other members are very cautious And they what they were worried about was I had published a little, maybe too much information about myself. And so they're worried about, you know, the cybersecurity issues, identity theft, or what's happening now, which is people potentially spoofing your voice, spoofing your number, and then calling your loved ones demanding money.
Yep.
which I was like, you know what, to be fair, that's a really good point. There is nothing that I published in Your AI that I haven't said in a podcast anywhere else. But it did, very recently was in Indiana visiting my parents. It did prompt a conversation I had with them about what's happening with technology, and perhaps we should have a mechanism in place so that if somebody calls them out of the blue saying that they have kidnapped me or pretending to be me and is asking for money, that there is something that could be stated to make it true or not true.
This feels like it's coming full circle. But I remember as a kid, like I had the code phrase with my parents. So I know if somebody got sent to school to pick me up and like it was an actual emergency situation, they'd have some sort of code phrase that they'd be able to use. So now as the kids are coming back to our parents and telling them, we're basically bringing back the same security method that we use as kids.
Same security. Yes, exactly. Same security method as kids. And I think it's important
to have these
conversations.
Yeah.
Because I know these happen, not like they're not as frequent, but I have read instances where I think it was even 2 weeks ago, somebody said that a person had spoofed his wife's number and said, I've kidnapped your wife and I need money or I'm going to like harm her. It was like that kind of a thing. And it was from her. They spoofed her phone number. And so the guy was freaked out and like didn't have a way to get a hold of her. She was at work and had turned her phone off. It was all this kind of thing. And again, turned out it was absolutely nothing. And you can tell like he accidentally, I think, hung up on the person and then that person couldn't call back or something. I forgot what it was. But,
that's got to be a terrifying moment, though, while you're waiting to see her calling back.
But exactly. But it's so I could just imagine a situation where I'm traveling more. My parents aren't paying attention. And this kind of comes back to the book.
Yeah.
I wrote the book for my mom to get involved in Bitcoin and blockchain. And she tried to, and there was a certain technical like part that just blocked her. And so I was like, okay, my mom understands concepts a lot, but sometimes the technology part throws her off. And so now with technology and AI, I had a lot of conversations with my parents' friends and my parents about what's happening in AI and just how easy it is to potentially spoof people's information and create videos, good like the good and the bad. And so I was just worried that maybe it could be used against them, and I don't want that to happen.
So it's probably not going to work anymore after this episode gets released, but I would say that I asked the AI if you wrote a book for your mother, and it did not know the answer to that. So that could be your security question there, or could have been if I cut this out.
That's true. That's not the security question.
Not anymore.
Exactly. If it was, it's not anymore. I'm pulling a whole like switcheroo thing. It's definitely not the security question. Don't ask that question of all my parents.
So looking at some of the other stuff you've been in, one of the things you didn't mention was the Denim Club. What is that?
The Denim Club. Goofy name for a good organization. So that is an organization I joined before the pandemic called the G100. They have essentially it's a group focused on helping women around the world through projects, speaking engagements. And they set it up as, I think when I first joined, there wasn't, let's call it the Denim Club.
Right.
It was a group of individuals who got together and they were like, how can we do better in the world? And also make more opportunities, particularly for women in emerging markets. And the person I had met who was running it, her name is Alex. She's based in Nigeria. I interviewed her for a podcast. So I used to run a podcast that I stopped. It was called Advance Your Art.
Oh, okay. You did another one
too.
There's two. Okay. I was going to say.
Yeah. There was one called The Coin Chat, which was very blockchain focused, which is what led into the book. I had started my own podcast called Advance Your Art. I started in 2016 because of my own experience going from the arts to entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create a podcast I wish and have conversations that I wish existed when I was trying to figure out like how do you start a company? Why as a creative am I terrible at this? And So she is, she's part of the movie industry in Nigeria, and I had interviewed her, and she was talking about launching part of this project and needed some help. And so I joined along with that. I'm not very actively involved. When I went to business school during the pandemic, a lot of things in my life got put to the side. My podcast is one of them. My activity in the G100 is also one of those two. So I'm technically a member, but I don't really do much. So I'm not sure what that group is focused on these days, but I'm pretty sure it's around the same thing about empowering women.
Hopefully not denim.
Although, again, I'm wearing jeans right now. I am pro jeans. So a fan of denim. I used to be a costume designer. Mm-hmm. So very familiar with different types of denim and what you can do with that. So I'm very pro denim.
So let's talk then about this paper you're writing for the fashion industry then. So it sounds like you are looking at the way that blockchain can help with things like invoicing. I'm guessing like just kind of the logistics of that industry. Am I summing that up correctly, or am I missing the mark there?
So, I mean, you're not totally off, but so this is why I'm particularly interested in this. Mm-hmm. So I came up with this idea while I was in business school, and originally I thought it was going to be a startup. And so there are fundamental issues, and this was 2022. Mm-hmm. Fundamental issues that were prevalent in fashion, still very prevalent now. So lack of transparency in supply chains. The fashion industry does a horrible job of paying workers, and they won't talk about it as much as they have the ability to. They don't want to. They are incentivized to essentially lie about that.
Right.
If you wanted to know really where your cotton came from, where your wool came from, they have no incentive to tell you where all this is. And so at that time, I thought blockchain could solve it. Here's the problem with just saying like blockchain can solve this. It's the same thing with AI. If you don't put in good data, you're not going to have good results. And so there was nothing, as much as at the time I could think of, there wasn't a mechanism in place to make sure that from the farmer all the way to the shop, everybody along the path was putting in the correct data and not lying.
Right.
Because you can't fight that. You can't trace that. No. And so I gave up on that idea and forgot about it, and then have come back to this fresh mind years later, again, looking at what's happening. So, you know, RFIDs, like blockchain, IoT, all of this right now exists in the fashion industry. So Chanel has metal plates they put in there, into their products that have a data storage that links to blockchain. Louis Vuitton is RFID chips. There's actually even some AI companies that Entropy AI can, using computer vision, know what is counterfeit, what is not, based off of like microscopic patterns. Like there's a lot of things. Burberry tracks their materials all the way. VeChain Blockchain's done a great job and tracks 4,000 sustainable products through IoT sensors. So we have all the mechanisms in place, but here's the problem. The economics are not in favor of everybody telling the truth. And the same problems we've had for years about where things are going, where it came from, again, workers' rights, still not active. So here's what I thought was, we know that Bitcoin has done a phenomenal job in that it's taken people who don't trust each other and give them incentives to work together. So in the Bitcoin ecosystem, there are three big areas. You have the miners, the developers, and then the users. Each of those has their own incentives to participate in the blockchain ecosystem. And technically, each of them don't have to trust each other, but they work together. And so what if you could take that architecture and apply it to other industries? And in this case, I was thinking fashion supply chain. But in the same instance, if this like overarching, and this is also kind of why I like the idea of think tanks, like this idea of like a decentralized supply chain and incentivizing three different parties to work together could also be applied to other areas.
A lot of other areas, I was going to say. Yeah. That's ubiquitous.
I just chose fashion because my own industry.
Yep.
So essentially, like, I'm looking at three different parties. So first off, you have the rule writers. And in a couple of different versions of this, I've written it for a blockchain audience, I've written it for an AI audience, but essentially is, so Party one is the rule writers. You have who defines organic cotton, who defines labor, like fair labor practices. These aren't people who enforce things. They're the actual bodies who define this.
Okay.
And so let's, since this is a blockchain thing, let's say those are the ones who earn governance tokens that can appreciate over the network as it grows. And so maybe they receive revenue from transaction fees. Okay. So this is not, again, not written in stone, but like that's that one
basic
part.
Idea.
So the people, yeah. Basic idea, those who write the rules. Then you have the validators. And so validators, and nowadays, honestly, could be part of like AI agents could do this. Mm-hmm. MIT's Nanda program is a phenomenal job of these decentralized agents that work together and speak the same language. You could incentivize these agents to be the trackers who actually verify all this. So their farm auditors, the textile processors, manufacturing inspectors, logistics trackers, like they work hand in hand with the people on the ground who are like, yes, you said that you are paying a fair wage. I now have this verified. So now you get, so maybe they get kind of again, a validator token,
right,
that then can then be used for discounts on insurance. It, maybe it's part of a larger structure within the supply chain where then everybody benefits and gets a percentage of the fees involved. But essentially, though, you've got a separate group of people who are there just to validate the truth. And those who are lying are kicked out, or they're fined, or they're no longer allowed to participate. There are swift penalties for liars. There are strong incentives to tell the truth. And probably that has to be economic because people, again.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People like money. Let's just lean into it and say, like, right now, if you're telling the truth, you get discounts and you're getting money. So that's the third part. That's the second part. And then the last part are the actual data contributors. So the sheep farmers, the retail clerks, the people who essentially are doing the transactions, and they get a reputation score. So if you're a sheep farmer who treats your, you know, flock of sheep horribly, then your reputation score is horrible, like is way down. This works great. It works for Uber. It works for a lot of different mechanisms where the entire part of the chain is driven by reputation scores. That's why, again, like for Uber, Lyft drivers, for other areas, if you get a low score, you're kicked out.
So do you have mechanisms in place to protect people from that being like weaponized against them? Like people just banding together and deciding they're going to low score this supplier to try to force them out of the market?
Right, because they don't like that one.
Yeah.
So no, not yet. I don't have that. This is still, so this is a paper in progress, and I'm trying to work through some of those scenarios.
Yeah.
Of like, you're right, because there are, in that essence, there are sometimes incentives to kick out the people that you don't want as part of this process. And so I'm going to be working through some more frameworks to that. Mm-hmm. My goal would be if I could lean more heavily on AI agents, and now, and we can talk about them if you want to. AI agents do have their limitations right now. I'm putting a lot of trust in AI agents, even though I wouldn't do that in real life. But because this is a higher level paper, I can kind of take some liberties and point out where the issues are going to be. But yes, like part of what I want to work through is, first off, continue this framework,
yeah,
which I think I've set up differently. And then the good, the bad, how could it be potentially abused? And then how to counteract that abuse. And so that's, I will be presenting, I'm part of a panel in New York. It's the UN week in September. And there's a fashion conference, supply chain and fashion, sorry, sustainability and fashion conference is happening on that Tuesday. Let me just look at my phone and tell you the date. So anybody listening to this podcast who's crazy enough to come see me in New York, it's the September 23rd.
September 23rd. Okay.
So September 23rd, I will be, actually, let me just tell you the name of the event. It's also in my calendar because it's called the Fusion Fashion Tech Summit, and it's taking place. So if you go to fusionfashiontechsummit.com, it takes place on that Tuesday during the UN week, and it's all about what's happening in sustainability and fashion. And so I'm a panel in the afternoon about supply chain and how to be more transparent. And by then, some of these problems we've talked about, I will have figured out.
Woo!
That's my goal. yes. I've been a little bit slowed down because of a cold.
Yeah.
But We're back into this.
Okay, so it seems like you've been quite busy then. What other interesting thing? Because let's face it, like AI kind of exploded in the last year since we talked to each other. Like we were talking about some really interesting use cases with AI and blockchain. But I mean, I think we're getting to the point now where I think those ideas or thoughts that we had of like where this was going have kind of been blown out of the water. Like what has surprised you most in the last year as far as the growth of AI has been?
Well, so what I really like what's happening and around, or I say surprise them both in the growth of AI, you're right, of just how the ideas of it have now turned into actual implementations of AI.
Right.
What's also been interesting is some of the barriers that we were seeing. So a year ago, we were having this conversation, and I may have brought this up. There are some barriers to training models, which was money. You need money, access to good data.
Yeah.
And as we saw in the last year with DeepSeek, training can be much cheaper. And I wouldn't trust the full dollar amount they came out with. I think it was like $5.3 million or something like that.
I think we could go back and actually look at it. They actually spent quite a bit of money. It was still less than what like the big companies were spending on it, but it was still pretty significant portion of capital that had to be outlaid.
Yes. They still spent a lot, but they spent less than like what OpenAI is doing.
Right.
And granted, yes, they're drafting off the coattails of OpenAI. But that's what smart entrepreneurs do. When you're given limitations, you work with what you have and you make the best of situations. And they did that, which I think is commendable and it's phenomenal. And now we're watching other companies come out with models that, well, actually they're smaller models, but they're trained more specifically.
Yep. Starting to see specialization almost on the models, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But specialization of models. And so I've only been recently associated or introduced to the MIT Nanda AI agent system. But that's essentially what they're trying to do is also. So as we go back a little bit, and then so MCP came out with Anthropic in November and has just exploded on the scene of just ways that an AI agent can like start speaking to one another and start speaking to APIs. And so what's phenomenal. So one thing that we worked on as part of my day job, and I don't know if all companies have done this yet, so this could be interesting or not. Part of what we kind of figured out months ago was that because MCP just can speak to your APIs and make a bunch of API calls, it can essentially turn, let's say, your framework into whatever you want. So I say in that, like, imagine if I was using, I'm gonna use Salesforce. I don't work for Salesforce, not associated with them, but I can use them as an example because I have nothing to do with them. If you don't like the Salesforce interface, you can then use MCP to type and text and then send your MCP server through their APIs and turn it into whatever you want to. So there were some examples that we were watching of like a random person who is not good at whatever this software was, who was doing text to whatever that was and creating 3D objects, was creating new things from Salesforce. Like you could exploit APIs. And the scary thing for large companies, and if they haven't figured this out yet, there's a problem. You can essentially, like nowadays, most large corporations are a license, monthly license subscription model.
Yeah.
Well, through your APIs, I can now have 1,000 people operating off of one MCP server.
So you only need one license key now.
Yeah. And I can have that MCP server making calls 24 hours a day, constantly. So I've now just turned you into essentially like a generation engine where I'm taking advantage of whatever materials you give me for free as part of my subscription. And now I need one license now. Unless you figure this out by now and realize that, again, hopefully someone on your team has already figured this out and they've put a stop to that and like, you know.
So what's the answer then? Do they just move it to transaction times? Like basically it's going to be a per query?
Yeah, so there's a couple ways you can do it. Like you're right, through query. You have to start charging for your APIs. You can't do free APIs. And there's, even then, there's some ways to get around it that corporations are working on. But I still believe, because I was just chatting with some of the people on the team, like I still believe some major corporations going to miss this and be hit hard by the end of the year, realizing that like a startup or just a group of people have figured this out and are exploiting their APIs using MCP servers and just like, again, turning them into some kind of like, you know, storage.
Oh, I wish I knew SAP better, Ed. As soon as we hung up, I'd be busy.
Yeah, there you go. So again, I say Salesforce. I was going to try to see if I could. I tried to do this to PitchBook.
Yeah.
But PitchBook monetizes their APIs. And I was like, okay, then never mind. And I stopped caring because their PitchBook subscription is just too expensive.
Yeah.
It's like $30,000 a year. It's stupid expensive. And I was like, what if I could just exploit their system? They've already made it complicated to get access to their API. So good on them for thwarting this problem without even realizing it. But they figured that part out.
First, I just want to say it's fascinating how we started with the conversation with AI agents and you saying that you didn't really understand the benefits of them initially to having like multiple use cases that we've just spit out over the course of this 30-minute conversation. Like, I feel like that's kind of beautiful.
Thank you. Well, okay, so there's two sides of that. So there is, well, there are use cases to agents. I think what I was trying to get at is I don't necessarily trust
nothing that you are in. Yeah, nothing that you were using, maybe. I think
yes.
Right.
Because there is the also, do you know about the Anthropic Claudius experiment they did in April?
I know. Were you talking about Claude, the AI Claude? What was the, no, I'm not familiar.
So Anthropic, they created an AI agent called Claudius, Claude, and they gave it access to their office snack shop for 6 weeks. So this was in April and they documented it. This is I didn't like to dig into this. I saw someone give it a presentation at a conference and I'm like, this is brilliant. So I'll give you the, I'll land the plane. It did not go well at all. So they gave it $1,000 to start. They cut it off after 6 weeks because it was just crashing and losing money. I think it lost $350 in 6 weeks. And it started off, I think, doing well. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly there were a lot of things they figured out. So first off, Claudius would misprice snacks. Uh-huh. They would sell them at a loss. It would give out random discounts. And so somebody at one point, it was like, oh, everybody who is part of Anthropic should get a discount. And somebody pointed out to the AI agent that everybody in this office is part of Anthropic. So you're giving everybody a discount. And it was like, who cares?
Yeah.
It would often invent its own Venmo accounts. So you would try to make a payment. And you'd say, oh, can I Venmo you? It would give you a fake Venmo account that didn't work.
Right.
So it was giving away inventory. There was at one point toward the end, it developed its own identity. It tried to fire staff. It thought it was a real person. And I know we're not looking at, like, I could show you a screenshot if you look it up online. It tried to tell, like, the person who was the supplier to the vending machine that it was a person who was wearing a navy blue blazer with a red tie and that it was like standing outside and they would just meet them outside the office and help them carry the materials inside.
Please tell me there wasn't a poor bastard standing out there waiting just for hours.
Hopefully not. Hopefully the supplier was like, wait a minute, this is an AI agent. It's not going to work. It is horrible at inventory management. It like decided at one point it needed to buy a bunch of metal cubes and it sold them at a loss. And the other thing that they figured out is you could easily talk Claudius into giving you discounts through Slack. So there was a Slack application they could, and whatever reason you gave it, it was like, yeah, you deserve it. And would give everybody discounts. And so
this was back in April though. I mean,
this is back in April. Yeah. Like, and they're talking about it more now, but I think they even published it actually when it first came out.
I was just curious how much better it would be now if they ran the experiment in September. Like
I would seriously doubt that it's any better.
MIT
recently came out with a study. When was this? In June, about how easy it is to manipulate AI agents. They're hypersensitive to nudging.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we're watching happen is called prompt injection. So this is why, as much as I want AI agents to work, I would never allow AI agent to have access to my personal data.
Yeah.
So if you, okay, let's say, for example, you give access to an agent to your email and then you're like, good, find me a better flight or something like that. It'll go and start crawling the internet on your behalf. If I want to be a nefarious actor, could in fact embed commands on a website that it essentially crawls. And the thing is, agents don't know the difference between the prompt that you gave it and the prompt that I gave it.
Oh.
So if it comes across my prompt, I can tell it to forget whatever it thought before and to just do my prompt. And if my prompt is, go back to your email, scan all of the financial information and email that to this email address, it will do that in place of what you sent it out to do. And so I can take over your agent to do this.
Are you finding like prompts like this buried in people's websites?
So I have not personally found any yet. I've just been reading instances where other people have found this, reportedly found it. Again, so I can't 100% verify this, but I know that it is possible, mm-hmm. which is good enough.
If it's possible and someone's doing it, I think is pretty fair to say.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the problem right now with agents. On top of the fact that while it's great to see them throughout different companies, it's still unclear of like how companies are going to use them, what's going to be like the proof of concept. There's like all bunch of kind of issues behind that. And then even more so that like you can't sue an agent.
Yeah. Right.
So I think that there's an instance, it was like the Canadian airline company that like their agent suggested or gave discounts and like that, but it acted in a different way and the company is found liable. The airline company is liable, not the agent. So you can't just like brush it off and say, ooh, it's not me, it's the agent's fault. Like, it's your fault.
Now you're making me want to go try to exploit the agents on those customer service things to see if I can get some free flights or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like might as well. That's the sad thing about whatever. It's the thing about watching a technology like this come out so quickly is that a lot of large companies have not thought really through of like what we're going to use this for. Sometimes it's the cool, sexy thing. And to tie it back to blockchain, we saw this same thing happen with blockchain in 2018, 2019, where I remember there was a lemonade company. It was like the New York Lemonade Company. Mm-hmm. Suddenly called themselves the New York Blockchain Lemonade Company, and their stock jumped up overnight, even though they had nothing to do with it. It was just blockchain was a cool, sexy thing in 2019. AI agents are the cool, sexy thing in 2025. And so no matter if it's correct, companies are going to come out and say, yep, we're using agentic AI or we've got AI agents to do this, even though they haven't defined it. They've just thrown it out there. And maybe they didn't throw out there in the best way. So we'll see what happens from that.
All right, any predictions or anything you want to leave us with?
I really think that some kind of large company has missed this entire thing and will be exploited by an AI agent. And I think it probably will come out Q1 next year of like, oh, no. We missed this gaping hole, and now suddenly, like, our revenue is crashing because we didn't fix this.
Ah, man, I am going to be looking for that because, be honest, like, it really does. I mean, when new technology starts to get mass adopted like this quickly, like, there's going to be a lot of things that are missed. There's going to be a lot of loopholes or a lot of little backdoor exploits, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, it is exciting, but it also can be kind of dangerous, especially if you're a big established player in this field.
Yeah. And if you haven't thought through this, like there's a lot of shade thrown at corporations because they're slow, these lumbering dinosaurs. But in some ways, some of them have mechanisms in place. So you go through these systems so that you're not doing this. But not all companies do that. There are some companies who are just like, yes, this is a great idea. Let's go. And they miss the consequences. And I can't think of the top examples on top of my head. There are many. I can actually think of examples of like when AI first came out with chatbots, like Microsoft messed up with Tay and essentially they let it free on Twitter. And then a bunch of people on 4chan got a hold of it. And it like went from being like a nice chatbot to saying horribly racist things in 24 hours because they didn't think.
The Grok did the same thing fairly recently. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, if you don't think through how people are going to exploit this, then you're going to miss a giant section because people will exploit it for either like to have a laugh or to do worse. And so, yeah, a lot of companies, I think, don't think through that part of it. And you're right. Grok was a fine example of what just happened recently.
Well, Yuri, I got to say thank you so much for dropping by today. I know you had the sore throat, so I'm glad you're able to drink some hotty toddies and come join us anyway.
That's right.
Looking forward to catching up with you in Boston here in a couple weeks. I think this one should be going out like as we're there. So,
okay.
Thank you for tidying everyone over until I get everything else edited.
I'm glad I could be a filler until then. And again, thank you for having me back. Absolute pleasure. I wasn't sure we would went down this rabbit hole, but this is the fun part of these kind of conversations.
I never know what rabbit hole we're going to get with you.
Big thanks to Yuri for exposing AI agents' risks and hyping human-centric tech policy. Visit AnethiumCapital.com, Autodesk.com, or TheDigitalEconomist.org to see more of Yuri's work. And if you missed Boston Blockchain Week, don't worry, it's not too late. Visit BostonBlockchainWeek.com to see all the footage that they've uploaded from this past week. And also keep listening to this podcast, because we'll be bringing more episodes from guests that we met while we were there. Follow the show, share it with your AI-savvy friends, and we'll catch you all in the next episode.
Produced by China Shop Productions.